If you're just joining us, we're looking at Facebook's ad policies on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The social media's hands-off approach to political ads is running contrary to other large tech firms in this presidential election year. So Facebook's policies have allowed for some misleading ads. In October, there was one ad from the Trump campaign that made false accusations about Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden. That ad went viral. It was viewed by millions of people. Do you think politicians should be allowed to tell mistruths in ads on social media? Is this a free speech issue, in your opinion? Political campaigns are allowed by law to tell them in TV ads. Do you think the same should hold true for social media? We're at 800-642-1234. Stephen Overly is a technology reporter for Politico. He covers the tech industry's influence in Washington, and he contributes to Politico's Morning Tech Report. Stephen, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
So earlier this month, we learned Facebook said, basically, we're going to keep on keeping on showing political campaigns that use targeted advertising that Facebook won't fact check their ads. What is the significance of those decisions?
So they'll be very significant because Facebook is expected to be the dominant online advertising platform for political campaigns. And we're already seeing political campaigns spend millions of dollars to sort of get their message out to Facebook users and potential voters who use the social network. So really, the company's decision here was going to have a lot of consequence. And you saw that in the lead up with political campaigns and political parties putting a lot of pressure on Facebook, really not to change its policy, especially when it comes to targeting political ads and essentially determining how it is that political campaigns reach potential voters online.
So when we say political ads here, what does that entail? Is this just ads from political campaigns or is this larger?
So that is the lion's share in sort of defining exactly what constitutes a political ad is different, but or has been difficult. By and large, the platforms like Twitter, Facebook, Google differentiate between political ads, which is something that might come from a political campaign or a political party, and what they've called issues ads, which target or deal with political issues, say gun control, for example, or climate change. And really, the companies have handled those ads differently, in part because one of the, you know, political ads tend to come from elected officials or want to be elected officials, and therefore should be handled in a different way. At least that's how the companies have viewed it.
So why are targeted political ads and maybe this micro-targeting of certain populations, why is that a concern?
So micro-targeting of political ads allows campaigns to reach voters or I guess internet users, but potential voters on a very granular level. And one of the issues there is therefore you're having kind of individual messages sent to small groups of people. And there's less ability for fact checking of those ads, less ability to open up public debate if something in those ads is maybe misleading. And so therefore you're able to in some ways kind of manipulate or skew the online political discourse. And so that's the concern that campaigns have been sort of using this micro-targeting to exploit that fact that these social media platforms, though they are very broad, actually allow you to reach a very narrow audience.
In 2016, this was a concern, too, with spreading misinformation, political misinformation.
That's exactly right. Political ads were one of several ways that misinformation was spread during the 2016 election. And so, you know, to their credit, some of these tech platforms really did take a lesson from that. And they've created online databases where political advertisements are listed. You know, the groups behind those advertisements are listed. Information about how those ads are targeted is listed. And the idea here is to really make this whole process more transparent. Allow people like you or I to go online and really see who is behind political advertising. Now, that doesn't do away with the political advertising, of course. It's still very much part of our feeds online, but at least there's more transparency around them. That's been the approach that really all of the tech platforms have taken. One area where they've differentiated since then is the degree to which they allow political advertising and the degree to which they allow this micro-targeting.
Right, because Twitter is kind of washing its hands of political ads.
That's right. So, it's interesting. If you look at Facebook, you look at Google, and you look at Twitter, each company has taken a slightly different approach here. And so it'll be kind of fascinating to watch throughout the 2020 election cycle the consequences of each of those decisions. But as you said, Twitter has said that they're getting rid of all political advertising on their platform. Now, that's an easier call perhaps for Twitter to make. They were the smallest of the platforms when it came to political advertising. But nevertheless, they've sort of staken out this position that you should not be able to buy access to their network if you're a politician trying to get out your message, that any kind of amplification of your message on social media should be earned. Google has taken a slightly less restrictive approach in that they have limited micro-targeting. If you want to run a political ad on Google today, you can limit based on factors like age and gender and geographic location, but anything more granular than that has been prohibited. And again, the idea there is to sort of make sure that ads are reaching larger audiences and that they're subject to kind of more online debate. And then finally, the most permissive policy is, of course, Facebook, which recently said they will continue to allow micro-targeting. They were not fact-check political ads. And instead, they're just sort of increasing their efforts to make those ads more transparent.
We're talking with Stephen Overly. He's a tech reporter at Politico, and we're talking about political ads on Facebook and the policies behind not policing their truthfulness. Do you use Facebook? How do you feel about the way the platform approaches political advertising? Do you agree with how other platforms like Twitter handle this issue? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Stephen, I was looking yesterday at the 2020 candidates, presidential candidates, and their digital spending. Just astounded to see the millions of dollars led by President Trump's campaign combined Facebook and Google buying about $35 million. So there's a lot of money at stake here.
That's absolutely right. A lot of projections put digital advertising spending alone in this election cycle over $1 billion. So there's a lot of money at stake here. And, I think, as we all know, we're spending more time online. We're spending more time using these social networks. And therefore, in each election cycle, they've become a more important piece of campaigns' advertising strategy. They are a more important platform for reaching potential voters, convincing them to support you. At the same time, they're also have opened up a new frontier in, political manipulation. The reality is, as I had one person say to me while covering this whole debate, politicians have been telling, mistruths since the dawn of politics. What's different now is that they can magnify that on the internet. They can reach such a large audience on the internet. And so, the consequences of kind of misleading advertising are that much greater due to the size of this audience.
Explain for us the parallel here or contrast between what you can do on this medium, on social media platforms, versus what you can say and put out there for TV advertising.
Well, one of the big differences is this micro-targeting that we've talked about. When you run a television ad, you can target it to a specific geographic market. You can perhaps put it next to certain programming. So perhaps if you want to reach women voters or you want to reach older voters, perhaps you'll pair your advertisement with a program that targets or reaches that demographic. With political digital advertising, you can get so much more granular than that. Beyond just age or gender, you can target people based on their interests. You can get insight into their political leanings based on, what they've posted or their activity online. You can target certain groups of people at a very granular level and sort of, speak to maybe their specific political interests or the issues that you know are likely to get them the most kind of agitated or inspired to vote. So that's one of the key differences. And you've seen campaigns really go full into digital advertising. because they've gotten much smarter about using that data to really reach people who they think will support their candidate. That's one of the big factors at play. You know, you're also just moving vast volumes of advertising across these platforms. You know, Facebook and Google and Twitter, a lot of their advertising process is automated. And so it really allows you to put ads out there much more quickly and frankly, much more cheaply. And therefore, you can see a greater number of political ads and different types of political ads, perhaps to test out, you know, how your message might resonate when it's delivered in different ways.
Where does Congress stand on these policies from Facebook?
So we've seen a lot of political pressure on Facebook, as well as the other internet platforms, for how they handle digital advertising. Obviously, every member of Congress is using Facebook to reach their constituents and to reach potential voters the next time they seek re-election. So, you know, this is an issue that directly affects all those decision makers. We've seen some discussion of potential legislation on this issue, but nothing has moved. And the reality is it gets into a very sticky issue of First Amendment free speech rights. You know, any sort of regulation of political advertising will certainly come up against arguments that it violates the First Amendment and violates this long-held principle in our country that the federal government or government in general should not be dictating speech. And so while you've seen a lot of rhetoric in Congress, you've seen a lot of pressure from members of Congress on these companies, you have not seen a lot of momentum behind any legislative proposals for how to deal with this issue.
Talking with Politico technology reporter Stephen Overly about the policies of Facebook, Twitter, Google on political ads. Facebook's ad archive shows President Trump's campaign has spent about $20 million on ads on that particular social media platform. So as you scroll through your Facebook feed and see ads, what do you notice about them? What stands out to you? What do you think would create more transparency around political ads you see on social media? Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment with Politico's Stephen Overly on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're talking about Facebook. The company has come under scrutiny for its policy of not removing political ads that contain misinformation. And Facebook recently announced steps to give users more control over the ads that they see. But they did not back down on policing ads that spread false information. Do you think Congress should be involved in regulating what tech companies can post by their advertisers? Or do you think it should be up to the companies to figure out their own policies? Join in, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Stephen Overly covers tech for Politico, and he stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Nate is in Milwaukee this morning. Hi, Nate.
Hi, thank you for having me. This discussion actually reminded me of a couple of years ago when I remember reading that conservative groups were criticizing Facebook and pressuring Zuckerberg and eventually did meet with him. And I wonder if they were basically pushing him to let them lie to people they figured would be most susceptible to a given lie online, and at some point he caved. I think it was actually a great idea to potentially allow the lie to go through, but also add some sort of marker to it that says a fact checker looked at this and says it wrong. So you're allowing them to speak, but also pointing out that they're not speaking the truth.
Nate,
the transparent.
Yeah, Nate, ahead. I want to pause right there and see from you, Stephen, where is Facebook's founder, Mark Zuckerberg, in all of this?
Absolutely. So Nate raises an interesting point, which is that for a couple of years now, we've heard from conservatives this argument that social media platforms, including Facebook and Twitter, are sort of censoring conservative voices. President Trump has sort of championed that cause quite a big way. And so as a result, Facebook and specifically Mark Zuckerberg have certainly engaged more with conservative politicians and conservative advocates. And it has been reported that Mark Zuckerberg has met with some of those conservative leaders, as was mentioned. You know, Facebook has really and Mark Zuckerberg specifically have really sort of said that free, the argument behind making political ads more permissive is free speech, that people deserve to hear directly from politicians what it is they're thinking and what policies they're promoting, and then make a decision for themselves what is trustworthy and what is fact and what is fiction. That's not a decision the company should be making. So that's really the line that Mark Zuckerberg has stuck to when defending kind of this very permissive advertising policy on his social network.
Nate, thanks. Let's go to Brian now in Madison. Hi, Brian.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to guess the comment on the definition of political advertising. What we saw in Cambridge, the Cambridge Analytics, was their use of an outrage cycle of micro-targeting certain messages to provoke political response and to basically groom political thought. Is there any comment on what actually constitutes advertising?
Brian, thanks. And at Cambridge Analytica, they had harvested the personal data of millions of people's Facebook profiles without their consent. Stephen?
Absolutely. So this definition of political advertising has been a tricky one because there's not a textbook definition. It's something the companies themselves have had to define. And on the one hand, the narrow definition is advertisements from political campaigns and candidates. And that's certainly true pretty much across the platforms. Where it gets murky is this question of issue-based advertising. And as was mentioned in the Cambridge Analytica case, and really by, in election meddling more broadly in 2016, a lot of the ads were actually based on issues. They tried to exploit different points of view and sort of discord around issues like race and religion, as well as political issues like climate change, abortion, gun control. And so, sure, we can discuss political advertising, but really when you look at the broader scope of kind of how we talk about politics online, candidates and campaigns are just one piece of that. And really there is this broader sort of online discourse around some of these social differences. And those can be even more emotional and perhaps more ripe for exploitation than even our discussion around political campaigns.
We're talking with Stephen Overly, a tech reporter at Politico, and he's been following Facebook in this election year. And the social media platform has been under pressure to change its hands-off rules for political ads. Stephen, some are concerned that these targeted political ads aren't the real concern, that there is a bigger threat to democracy in organic, unpaid content. What is that domain like?
Absolutely. So political advertising and sort of this question about misleading political ads is just one piece of broader concerns about misinformation around our elections. After the 2016 election, we learned, for instance, that Russian trolls had been meddling in our online political discourse, trying to sway political points of view and trying to influence essentially the election's outcome. And really in this 2020 election cycle, the threats may be even more advanced and even harder to detect. So for instance, some of the tactics we saw from Russian trolls in the 2016 election are tactics we could see from Americans trying to influence the 2020 election. And that includes what you refer to being organic posts. And these are posts from regular users of Facebook and Twitter and YouTube that maybe contain inaccuracies or contain deliberate misleading content. So one prime example that we've probably all seen online are memes, these sort of pictures that sort of convey a point of view. And sometimes they're, a little bit cheeky or a little bit flippant. Sometimes they're quite serious and they can spread very quickly online. They're not always accurate and they certainly lack a lot of context. And so these are just some of the ways that, the information that we all see online can be manipulated. And therefore, we as internet users have to be kind of savvy about what it is we're believing and sort of vetting that for ourselves, especially if these platforms are not going to vet it for us.
So we're months away from the 2020 election now. What do you see will change or not change in the future on these social media platforms?
I think you'll certainly continue to see pressure on these social media platforms to respond to inaccuracies and, you know, misinformation that spread across them. You know, that could certainly be in the form of political advertising, although now that the major platforms have all sort of staked out their position, it would be surprising to see them make changes to them. You know, they've deliberated about these decisions for many months before making them. And so it's likely they'll stick with them at least through this election cycle and perhaps reevaluate after 2020. But, you know, every media organization, every political campaign, and every sort of watchdog will be on high alert to look for, you know, targeted misinformation campaigns around the 2020 election.
Are watchdogs concerned about Russian interference in 2020?
Certainly there's concern about Russian interference and foreign interference. But, you know, some of the concern is also around, domestic interference, if that's what you want to call it. You know, certainly it's, you know, illegal for foreign nationals to try to influence a U.S. election. It is not illegal for Americans to try to influence a U.S. election, right? In fact, that's quite encouraged to participate in democracy. But, you know, there is this question of when those contributions are deliberately misleading or deliberately manipulative, you know, how do you rein those in? How do you try to account for those? And that's a question that we're going to be grappling with over the next several months and even beyond November.
Stephen, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Stephen Overly is a technology reporter for Politico. He covers the tech industry's influence in Washington and contributes to Politico's Morning Tech Report. Just ahead, we look at a new biography about Gwen Jorgensen, a Wisconsin triathlete who made it to the Olympics and won the gold in Rio in 2016. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.